It's always exciting as the church continues to grow to see the new life that continues to develop. That we are not a static organization, but that the church is a live and living, breathing thing of God. And so we continue to live into that. And so, several weeks ago, we talked about some dangerous prayers. Some of you remember those. Some of you have slept since then. But we've had some interesting conversations as a result of those. At least I have had over the past several weeks. One of the dangerous prayers that, as I was preparing for this week, that really kind of caught me is thinking of this is. We prayed an especially dangerous prayer when we said, God, break me of the things that keep me from you. That God, I invite you to enter into my life in a way that challenges me not to the status quo, but to move forward. And so today we're going to take that a step further. In understanding of our relationship with God, because I don't know about you, but I've never met anybody that set out to be overweight. It happens. I'm living testimony of that. But I've also never met anybody that had a 5-year goal of, I want to be bankrupt. I've never met anybody that has really thought, you know what, I really just want to be addicted to pornography. I don't know anybody that plans to set out to just, I want to be sinful and stupid to the point that I'm going to have to hide and lie and lose the trust of those that I love the most. We don't set out to make decisions to wreck our lives. But at the same time, you may not be setting out to make those decisions, but the problem is most people also are not planning to not do those things. It's not, you know, in case you missed it, last week we talked about the power of decisions. Understanding that the quality of our decisions determines the quality of our life. In other words, that we make our decisions and then our decisions have a tendency to make us. That although we can have good intentions, many of us are simply not very good decision makers. And that's why we introduced this plan, this concept of pre-deciding, the power of choosing ahead of time what we're going to do when we encounter things in the future. That when we're faced with some scenario, maybe how to spend money, or what to say, or what to look at, or how to treat someone, or where to go or where not to go, what to do or what not to do, that whenever we're faced with a certain situation, that we are going to have already pre-named and that we're going to pre-decide how we are going to live as a result in that. And this is in contrast to waiting until the moment we face the temptation. Waiting to decide what we're going to do. And so last week we introduced 6 I am statements that we're going to be covering over the next several weeks. About who we're going to be and who we're going to choose to be based on the values and things that we want to be, who we want to be, and more importantly, who God says we are. And the reason that we want to live into those statements is because when we pre-decide that our decisions won't be based just on the feelings and the emotions of the moment, but instead on who we want to be and who we are as children of God for the rest of our lives. That we're constantly drawing closer to God, not just trying to stay static based on, you know, cheap grace in our life. But instead that our life would be based on core values, because when our values are clear, the decisions become easier. And so as we begin this morning, I want to acknowledge that at one point or another, we have given in to temptation, all of us. And all of us at some point have regretted falling into that temptation. We've all been there, and the chances are that you gave into that temptation because you weren't prepared. You weren't ready. And yet, over and over and over again throughout Scripture, it tells us that we should be prepared because our enemy is on the attack. In fact, Paul wrote in 1 Corinthians 6:13, "Be on your guard and stand firm in the faith. Be courageous, be strong." Similarly, in Matthew 26:41, Jesus tells his disciples, "I want you to watch and pray so that you do not fall into temptation. The spirit is willing, but the body is weak." And that's why it's so important for us to pre-decide that we will, in fact, be ready. That we're going to be on the guard. We are watching what's going on. That we are prayerful about our life. Because the devil is coming for you. The enemy is after you. Our enemy has a goal, a mission to steal, kill, and destroy anything and everything that matters within the heart of God. In fact, 2 Corinthians 2, verse 9 says, "I wrote to you so that Satan, the father of lies, will not outsmart us, for we are familiar with his evil schemes." So understand, the adversary, Satan, devil, whatever you want to call it, whatever name you want to assign at this point, is after you. He's studying you. He knows you. And he wants to understand where you're weak so that when you're vulnerable, he knows how to attack. And it's usually subtle. He likes to get those little hooks and pull you in. And so he knows how to attack and desires to take you out of God's will, to hurt you and the people around you. And because of that, we need to be ready. I can't say it enough. We need to know and prepare because the devil's coming. But we also need to be prepared, not just because we know he's coming, but because we're not as strong as we think we are. This isn't an excuse. "Well, I'm just human." But we tend to think that we can handle a whole lot more than we think we can actually handle. And there's a very sobering warning in 1 Corinthians 10. It says, "If you think you are standing firm, be careful that you do not fall." Studies show that people vastly overestimate their ability to resist temptation. The technical term is known as restraint bias, that I can handle this. I can do it. Don't worry about me. I. that you think you can handle and fight off more than you can really fight off. And that's why, you know, when, and I told her I wasn't going to do this, but when Kim brings ice cream into the house. Yes, banana split ice cream, for if you were here last week. Boy, did I hear about that last week. And it wasn't by her. It was, it's easy to walk on by the first time. And I'm thankful I have a forgetful memory that I forget often that it's in there. But it may not be always on my mind, but if I'm not especially attentive to my surroundings and what's going on, it may not be that day that I fall. But after a while, if I'm not careful, you will find me in my recliner with a bowl of ice cream. And one of the reasons, and it's not just about ice cream, I hope you understand that. But one of the reasons is that we underestimate how much energy it takes to resist temptation in our life. That just fighting off temptation once, that's easy. But when it's constant, when the barrage continues, it drains us. And so we become spiritually and sometimes even physically, if definitely mentally, fatigued. Because that part of our brain that controls willpower tends to wear out. And so that ice cream becomes more of a temptation later on than it does early on. And you can make good, I don't know about you, but I can make good decisions all day long. And I can come home after a long day and find myself, without even thinking about it, binging out on ice cream. Because my willpower has started to wane, because my self-control, it's a limited resource. And the more we use it, the less we have. It has to recover and rebuild. It's a limited resource. And I'm not providing you an excuse, well, I've just faced too many temptations today, so this I get to do. That's not the excuse that I'm trying to provide. What I am trying to help you understand is that the devil's going to come for you, and it isn't always just going to be one time. It's going to be constant. And then you're not as strong as you think you are. And that's why it's critical that we begin to pre-decide some things, because we want to be ready to follow through with who God has called us to be. And that's why I want to share this morning three keys to fighting temptation. Remember, temptation itself is not sin. But when we dwell on it, when we follow through and we push through to what God has told us we are not to do, we fall out of relationship with God in sin. And so to illustrate my first thing to this morning is that we need to pre-decide ahead of time to move the line. To move the line. To illustrate this, Kim was wondering, what is this up here for? I have a line. It's a very thick line. It'll catch your attention. That what I want to do is understand, you know, it's just for our thing. That we're going to assume that on this side, that down there, that beyond this line is sin, that it's broken relationship with God, it's eternal punishment, it's all the things that God is telling us, watch out, don't go there, because that's not who I've called you to be. And but so we recognize that beyond this line, is sin. So if beyond that line is sin, then beyond this way is good life. It's faithfulness. It's obedience. It's a relationship with God and who He's called us to be. But what most of us do throughout our life in lots of different areas is we see and know that there is a line there that we are not supposed to cross, and that it's for our benefit that we do not cross. But what we do, instead of recognizing it, going, whoa, that's danger, we tend to go, whoa, look at that view. And we try to live on the line. Rather than recognizing the line is that border between where we shouldn't go and where we are safe. What's dangerous, what's eternal in that way without God. And yet we tend to live on the line. And we're going to get hurt. And don't sit there and polish your halo saying you never have that issue. That you've never really done it. Because we all do it in different areas where we don't think we're going to get hurt. But when I know something's really dangerous, I'll admit, if I know it's really dangerous, I'm not going there. I went with my dad and my family to the Grand Canyon. And we went and we're having a great time. My dad is petrified of heights. And he watches the news, and someone inevitably every year falls off a cliff on the Grand Canyon. And what were me and my kids doing? We're standing on the edge. I've got him on my back. We're looking over and doing all the things that we shouldn't do. And my dad's like, get back. And we're laughing. But we do that so often in our life. But our spiritual enemy is coming at us, and he's trying to draw us not just to the line, but past it in so many areas. And so what we need to do is, as we know that he's trying to come and draw us that, we need to pre-decide that I'm not going to get as close as I can. Instead of trying to live here, knowing that that's where the marker is, what I'm going to do in my mind and in my heart is I'm going to pre-decide and move that line. Because Satan's coming after me. Now, the goal when I do this is not to say, well, I know the marker was back here, but I've got buffer. I'm going to live still here. No, it's to move the line back in our hearts and in our minds. A couple of years ago, we described this when we put up guardrails in our lives. But even more so, this is more about establishing the rumble strip that's saying, you are in danger. That's there to correct you back into the right path. So what you do is you move that line away from what draws you in directions that are sin. You move that line and you give yourself a larger boundary in your life. Now, some may say, well, that seems just so restrictive. That just seems like all you're wanting to do is give me laws. Give me rules. The way I look at it is more along what David said in Psalm 16. He says, the boundary lines for me, they've fallen in pleasant places. Surely I have a delightful inheritance. What that means is because I choose to put boundaries in my life for my protection. Not for restriction, but so that I can understand it this way. It's not that I have all these rules in my life just to restrain my life, but I understand that that is not where I want to live my life. And so rather than focusing on the little of buffer that I have now given myself, I get to look at this and say, I get to live freely in the midst of all of this. That God has blessed me. God has given me all this other area to live in so that I don't have to focus on that. That when I put boundaries in place for my protection, it's not limiting. It's actually freeing because I know that I have freedom and safety to live in the midst of all of this that God continues to bless me with. So we move the line. But secondly, we also do this. We magnify the cost. What I mean by that is anytime we're tempted to give into temptation, to cross that line and realize because we've moved the line that when we do cross it, we still have time to make good decisions. We still have time to react. That we're not going off the cliff at that point, but by what we understand is there's still risk. And so what we want to train ourselves to do now is as we approach that line, we stop and we start to think and ask ourselves, what could go wrong? What could go wrong? The big question maybe is this: what is the worst case scenario that could come true? I mean, we choose to be ready because we know that the devil, the adversary, our spiritual enemy is coming at us regularly. We understand that we are weaker than we think. And so we get close. We understand that there's some buffer, but what we do is we're here approaching the line and we need to seriously consider what is the worst case scenario and don't sugarcoat it. Understand this, that if I continue on this path, what could happen? What would happen if this comes true? That if I do go this, think about all the things that you could lose in your reputation, in your ministry, in your integrity. Maybe it's your job. Maybe it's your family. Maybe it's your finances. Maybe it's your future. Think about the things rather than just at the moment. Think about what could happen. Because we need to understand that there is a warning in Numbers 32:23 that simply says this: your sin will find you out. The things do tend to come back. We think it's harmless. Nobody's around. Nothing's going to be, I'm not going to be found out. But things always tend to happen that way. And so what we want to ask ourselves is, what's the worst possible thing that could happen if I choose to go against God's will? And so we magnify the cost so that we would pre-decide not to do what we know will hurt us later. And we need to do this in every area of our life. What would happen if? And we magnify the cost from there by thinking about the cost, and not just the immediate cost, but the cost of the future, the full cost. Listen to me. In some of areas of your life and my life, 5 minutes of sin could wreck a lifetime of everything in your life. 5 minutes of sin could wreck a lifetime of pursuing Christ. Not because he's unwilling to forgive, but because of everything that's surrounded regarding that. And so we have to recognize that we have a spiritual enemy who's coming after us, and we have to be on our guard. We have to be on watch. We need to be praying. And so we move the line further from the edge. We magnify the cost, but we also need to plan our escape. Because sometimes it's really easy to stop here. Sometimes things happen around us, and we need to be thinking ahead. Ahead of time of how we're going to get out of any certain temptation that our spiritual enemy will bring to us. Literally think of your escape route. What do you need? What things do you need to put in your life, and actions do you need to take to escape? A good example scripturally of this is Joseph. Scripture says that he was a good-looking man. And Potiphar's wife starts taking notice of him. Here he is. He's just a faithful employee and doing all the different things. He's doing good. God is blessing him and Potiphar through him. And Potiphar's wife begins to look lustfully. And she says, "Come sleep with me." Imagine how easy it would have been for Joseph just to say, "You know what? This isn't my homeland. My family, in fact, doesn't even know where I am. She's coming to me. I'm not going to her. Nobody's going to find out. I'm young. I'm single. You know, it must be okay." You know, and he could have given in by rationalizing as well that, you know what, I didn't put myself here. God did. It's God's fault that I'm here because, you know what, I wasn't doing anything wrong when my brothers beat me up, put me in a pit, and then sold me. I wasn't doing anything wrong. So here he is in a bad situation. You know, God has let me down, so I should be able to do whatever. And so often we feel like, well, God didn't do what I wanted him to do in whatever situation, so I'm not going to do what he wants me to do. And yet Joseph, instead of deciding to use his disappointments to justify his disobedience, he had instead pre-decided that I, in my life, am going to honor God in all things. Amen. She comes to him and he faithfully resists. He consistently tells her, "No, your husband trusts me as a man of God. How can I sin against him and how can I sin against God?" And so he resists, and what happens when he resists? She stops, the angels sing, he's never tempted again. No, that's not what happens. She pushes harder, she keeps coming at him, day after day after day. He's watching his back as best as he can, he's giving buffer, he's prepared and all these different things, and yet the devil, just like for us, is going to keep coming after us, and he knows how he's coming after us, and we're not as strong as we think we are, and so we need to prepare a way out of escape. And you think, well, Joseph was strong. I mean, he's in the Bible. But he wasn't as strong as he thinks he is, but he was ready. And in his mind, he's smart enough, he's planned some different things. We can see, when we see scripture says that one day, when they're all alone, Potiphar's wife just doesn't come and talk to him and try to seduce him that way. Instead, she comes and she grabs his clothes. And it says that he left his cloak in her hand and got out of the room. He ran. Because in his mind, he knew it was better to have a good name and be faithful than to have a good coat. He had predetermined what he was going to do. If she grabs, I run. And the good news is that God is faithful. Yes, it didn't. You know, he ended up in jail, all these different things, but out of his faithfulness, and even in the midst of jail, all these things happen. The next thing you know, he is not just with Potiphar, but he ends up serving Pharaoh to the point that he has as much control as Pharaoh in most things of operation of Egypt, to the point that he saves his family and the country and all the different things. That God is faithful. 1 Corinthians 10:13 says, "No temptation has seized you except what is common to man, and God is faithful. He will not let you be tempted beyond what you can bear, but when you are tempted, He will also provide a way out so that you can stand up under it." Doesn't say He's going to remove the temptation. He just says, "I'm going to be with you, and I am faithful to give you a way out, but your obedience must happen." There's no lust, there's no financial temptation, there's no breach of integrity, there's no relational loss in which God hasn't said that there is another way if you will follow me. So we choose ahead, understanding that Satan's after us, and he's sneaky. It may seem like just one simple bowl of ice cream, but when compounded, you end up with a gut. When compounded, you end up with broken relationship. When compounded, you end up with financial ruin. When compounded, think of the cost of what lies before you if you do not obey God. And so we move the line, we decide to magnify the cost, understanding more than just the immediate in the midst of that. And we pre-plan our escape, because no one plans to screw up their life. But most people do not plan to protect their life. And so we have to be on guard. And what that means is we need to fully be honest about where we are vulnerable. Some of it's one thing, others it's another. I understand that. But how does your spiritual enemy attack you? Is it in your pride? Do you find yourself compromising financially because you put your security in your finances? Do you find yourself lying to make yourself look better? Are you gossiping about people to make them look bad or to make yourself look better? Do you judge others? Are you overly critical in most situations? Are you carrying unforgiveness in your heart? Do you find yourself giving into lustful temptations? Looking at things or even acting in ways that you know dishonor God.